Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back to Reclaiming the Republic. And as a matter of fact, this is the first year, and this is the Biden or the Burden effect. Let's no longer refer to Biden by his family name, but let's refer to him as his effect. He is a burden on American society. He is a burden on the Constitution. In every facet and in every way, he is a burden. So let's refer to the Burden administration and the Burden effect. And so one of the things, going to Red Pill Expo, you could feel the urgency, the exigencies in talking to people. Going to these types of events, you always kind of felt that, but the tone has changed. Over the past 4 years under Trump, many people had this feeling of complacency. They go, you know what? As long as we've got a guy in there that's, you know, doing the things, we're good. We're okay. No. This is why I constantly say that, you know, we need a president that actually goes on a state to state to state to state and actually spends all of his time, as much of his time possible, other than doing strategic deals to actually make America's trades in advantageous for America, and we stop subsidizing communism around the world and so forth and so on. You know, there's those things. But he has a staff, and there are people. Constitutionally, he has the ability to have that level of government. And I'm not talking about the Commerce Department. I'm talking about the State Department in creating those types of trade deals and wiping out all the bad trade deals that have been created since the progressive movement began way back in the 1800s. But anyway, we need a president that's going out to the states, that is not only just going out to the states, but also shutting down operations by the Environmental Protection Agency, shutting down operations by the Department of Justice, the FBI, all of these federal agencies that are out exceeding the boundaries of the Constitution. And we need a president to be telling the states that he has no authority to get rid of all of this unconstitutional government. But he does have the authority to protect them and keep the wolves at bay so that these federal enforcement agencies don't come down descending upon them and try to drag them into court and processes, that he will basically, you know, lock them down to allow the states over the next 4 years to do their job in dismantling all of this unconstitutional government. That's what America needs. You know, the slogan, make America great again? No, because in 4 years, after his next term is done, if he gets reelected or if he gets inserted as president, then after 4 years, then what? We'll have another burden come along that's going to basically rebuild everything on the argument that the states have never stopped the federal government. You have to have, as Madison points out, the importance, and we're going to get into this when we cover the resolutions and nullification as well as interposition, because nullification was not the efforts and intent of James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. And Madison makes it very clear in his notes on nullification in 1834. But what we are going to do is not only clarify, but we're going to actually prove to you how Republic Review dovetails with Madison and Jefferson's intent and what they actually exercised. So even though they were unable to successfully do it, they were able to pull off a coup in a year. I just want you to understand the magnitude of what those men did. As leaders, they recognized that they couldn't lead the states because the states were the problem. I am telling you, if the states are the problem today, then all is lost. We have to wake up the states. We have to take our states back, and the states have to assert their authority and demanding full compliance to the Constitution. Plain and simple, Can't make it any more succinct and concise than that. That is my best imitation of Madison I can do. So, as you know, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And as you know, we are in the midst of going through the Whiskey Rebellion. And as a matter of fact, when we left last, we were just going on an aside that went into and explored the Militia Acts of 1792. Now, can Congress abdicate their duty by basically allowing the president to do something directly? Well, actually, if the Constitution says Congress shall provide for, you really can't do that. You actually have to amend the Constitution to say that Congress, or as Congress dictates, because clearly there are points in time where Congress can actually dictate, you know, to allow something else to be done or other. And as, I'll give you a case in point, because when you look at Article 4 of the Constitution, and more importantly, when you look at Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, when they talk about, you know, the states asking for help, right? So the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them from an against an invasion. Semicolon. On application, so what has to happen is the states have to basically state, and it says, on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. Now, the reason why they added that clause, because they understand legislatures aren't in a session all the time, but the reason they point to the legislatures and the reason why the Constitution empowered legislators, not the president, not the Supreme Court, is because they are the sovereigns, they are our representatives. And the fact that this act actually went down this path of saying, you know what, we're just going to let the president, you know, become the commander-in-chief and do it. That actually flies in the face against the way the Constitution was explained. We actually went through this in the ratification debates, that only Congress has this power. They can't abdicate it, but they did. And so we're going to go through what they did and how they did to, you know, assist Washington. And the fact that they even did this and the fact that they even maintained any of this or any similitude or anything similar to this, then they were actually standing on shaky grounds. And at any point in time, the states could have and should have stepped up and said, sorry, it was really well defined in the debates on the ratification of the Constitution in our state and in this state and in that state and in that state, that you had to call the militia to then basically federalize so that then the commander-in-chief could exercise his authority in executing the laws of the Union, suppressing insurrections, and or in, you know, repelling invasions. And that is all you can use the militia for. Okay, so we're going to go through this line by line, and we're going to edit. I'll editorialize a little bit, so forgive me. But what I also want to do is, as I told you, we got the comment line, 425-270-5416. Now, once we're done with this content on the Whiskey Rebellion, we're going to take a break, and we're going to do a little bit of marketing. But more importantly, I have a comment. It's probably a couple minutes long from a gentleman by the name of Charles. And what he talks about is he talks about student debt and this whole student debt crisis, and he drills into this issue. And I think it's important that, you know, it's great because this is what brings people to the table. They realize that a very particular issue, abortion, whatever that issue is, it brings them to the table. The federal government is way out of whack here. And what's great is if these people that come to the table and they actually look at Republic Review and they're able to back away from their issue on the table to see all of the other issues on the table, then they realize that it's not their issue that's really the real problem. It's only a symptom to the problem. That the table itself is the problem. In other words, the federal government placing all of these roles, responsibilities, and powers under their control unconstitutionally is the problem. And that we have to get rid of that table, that thing that actually, you know, they've used to argue and say they can do this. And the only way, this goes back to my little tirade at the beginning here, The only way to do this is for the states to do it. We cannot, we don't have a king. There's no person authorized in the federal government to actually take on unconstitutional powers, powers not formally delegated. It was clear that the states had that power. And this is why Madison emphatically pointed the only way this can be constitutionally done. He even talked about this in his veto of the bonus bill in 1817. It is very clear that the states are the parents. And as I talked to Ward Connerly, God bless that man. He, you know, all the things he's gone through, and I'm so glad that he's, the Lord has blessed him with his health and his life and everything else. But when we sat down and talked about, you know, just trying to clean up education and trying to get education properly, you know, positioned in the states regarding the equal, affirmative action, and trying to fight affirmative action because it was an abomination in education. And it was his crusade to try to stop that. And he did that in California, and he's been going around. And so when we were talking, and I was interviewing him in my local Spokane show years back, you know, I asked him, well, you know, because in Florida he was talking about the fact, because I knew exactly the answer, but I wanted him to say it because, you know, then, because my audience knows my position, and you're going to know my position. You should know my position. But I will tell you my position and his position when we come back from the break. Then we'll dive into these Whiskey Rebellion, the protests, and this Militia Act of 1792. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so now we've got this conversation with Ward Connerly. He has successfully had the state legislatures in California, and I think he listed a couple of other states, to actually wipe away the affirmative action application or the utilization of affirmative action in the education system in these states. And so he was dealing with, at the time, I forget the governor, but he was dealing with the governor in Florida who made the decision to just not enforce the affirmative action. And he goes, that's the last thing he wanted. He doesn't want that to be done that way. And there's a very specific reason. This goes back to, you know, my talk about Trump going on this worldwide or nationwide tour and so forth. We have to have the those sovereigns who have the absolute authority over that part of that constitution, state constitution or the U.S. Constitution, and it happens to be, both of those are the state legislators. State legislatures have the ultimate say over that U.S. Constitution, over all things not delegated. In other words, if the federal government chooses to violate the Constitution and exercise powers not delegated, it is incumbent and it is required, and the state legislatures are duty-bound, as Madison clearly states, that it is their job to arrest the evil and put things in order, put things back, take the necessary measures to get the federal government into compliance. So, when I sat and said, well, why is it that you don't want it that way? Why is it that you're going the other way? Because he said, clearly, as I had told you, that when that governor leaves office, it's still sitting there as legislation that the next governor can pick up and say, we want to do this. But when you have the state legislatures come right out and declare and, you know, banish or remove that law and actually place a new law that there shall be no manipulation for demographics or anything in education, that education needs to be free, academia needs to be free, and it needs to be merit-based. Bottom line, you deserve the grade you get. You don't just get socially passed because you're of a specific demographic. That's repugnant in American principles. And so he completely gets this. And this is why we kind of talked a little bit about Republic Review, but there's no doubt in my mind, you know, he's a crusader and he's got his crusade and he's looking at this on the table. And I didn't get him to, you know, take the macro view of all the things that are on the table and how they can all be wiped away with Republic Review. There's no doubt in my mind. He's a very reasonable man. He's an intelligent man. I am humbled to be able to call him, you know, a friend and associate that, you know, because when I've engaged him, he remembers that conversation and meeting me in Spokane because he came into the radio station. And I'm going, well, you know, that is so humbling to know that such a prominent figure that I made that kind of, you know, impression. It's the same thing with J. Edward Griffin. There's, yeah, I love that guy. I mean, you know, these guys have their wits, they're smart, and they recognize these things that we're doing, and they go, you know what, I don't understand it fully, but I recognize this is important, and you're doing good work. And he's actually, I've sent my articles to him, and Edward has come right back and said, wow, you really hit the nail on the head here. This is great. We need to figure out how to get this into Red Pill Expo. Well, okay, let's do that. Because Red Pill Expo is an awesome forum. And the whole point of me even going down this path is that this whole burden effect was very evident, that we need a real leader in America, not a leader. We need a cadre of leaders. Because if you look at the revolutionary time, it wasn't just George Washington that led this nation to its freedom and liberty. It was a cadre of leaders. This is why I'm constantly asking for your help. We're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. This is not rocket science. We will help you understand. We need you to get up and articulate. This is not something you're going to make money on. I apologize. The framers never made money. The day you start trying to make this about money is the day you have lost the spirit of this and the day your insatiable desire for mammon actually overtakes you. We can't allow this to happen. And there are those of you that, you know, aha, oh yeah, I get that. Absolutely, I get that. Now, I do understand that people want to get compensated, and I'm telling you right now, I have spent thousands and thousands of dollars of my retirement doing this work, and I wouldn't change a thing. Maybe some of the spending I've realized, I spent money on, you know, these pamphlets or these postcards for the state or what have you, that, you know, it didn't pan out. And I took a leap of faith in thinking that it would, but nevertheless, I am committed to this cause. And so when if you've ever gone through intelligence training, the most dangerous people in the world are those who are committed to their cause. Ideologues, those who actually recognize the power of what they're doing and getting and working and convincing others to get there. there's no doubt in my mind. There's a reason why they always try to isolate. And, you know, the real enemy is the person with the real solution. And so, yeah, I'm hoping you take this information and you just, you know, compartmentalize this information into the space that even though you may be able to find out who I am, it's best you never do for my own good and for this nation's good until Republic Review is a movement that is moving in its own volition, on its own track to becoming, you know, that actual initiated process by the states where the states own it. Once the states initiate this and start moving this going down the path, then it doesn't matter who I am because it's moving. You can't stop this. The fire has started and it will spread because once states realize the level of power and authority that they have and how they can actually save and change their circumstances from one of a groveling nature to a, you know, an independent and self-sustaining sovereign state again, you know, things are going to really change in America. America will become a dominating force once we go through these power shifts and these paradigm shifts. Those shifts will cause some level of austerity, but that austerity will be pale in comparison to the austerity half if we fall into the global reset and the clutches of global communism. In other words, that is much more bitter when we go into communism because they're going to kill people. We're not going to kill anybody. We may get rid of people. We may enact the Tory Acts and send all the enemies of the Constitution to the land of their choosing. But we will not be killing anybody and getting rid of them by burying them as Pol Pot did, as Mao did, as Stalin did, as Hitler did, as all of these tyrants throughout history have done. And we've even seen it as Bill Clinton and the deep state has done to players like the Branch Davidians in Waco. They were murdered. Ruby Ridge, there have been murders. Levi Finnegan? Mr. Finnegan. I know that's his last name. I'm bad with names, so forgive me. Forgive me, Jeanette. Anyway, fact of the matter is that we have the opportunity, and I'm hoping, and I'm really thankful for being able to get the word out on other mediums. I've been spending some time on the Patriot Soapbox 24/7 live stream. I think that's what it's called, but it's kind of a long name. But the characters over there, the people involved in that, those people are committed. You know, there's lots of people that listen to me that we know that, you know, just has Alexa playing in the background and they hear me and that's interesting, but they're not really listening to learn and to get involved. It's just that, you know, they like what I'm saying. I guess I have a good sounding voice, you know, whatever, but they're not there to become active and engaged. That's why we constantly beg and plead to get you to grow this audience, to get you to become, you know, a leader in articulating Republic Review and getting others to actually come to the table and become a part of the solution instead of continuing to be a part of the problem. So with all of that, let me just dive right into the content that we have. And so what we're doing is we're going through the language or the breakdown of the language of the Militia Acts of 1792. In Section 8, and I kind of started reading this, but we didn't get to finish it, so we might as well start it off from the beginning. In Section 8 of the Constitution, the power to, quote, call forth, close quote, the militia was expressly given to Congress, as I already told you. And the only way the Congress can sidestep that is they have to change the language. Look at the elector clause in Article 2 of the Constitution. And when they made the 12th Amendment, they realized that they had to amend the Constitution because they were making a minor change to a power or to a function in the Constitution. And so they couldn't just do what they did. But they did, and not too many people complained. All the states have to do is come in and say, you know what? This was a violation. You can't do this. Congress shall have the power, and only Congress. There are separations of power, and Congress cannot blur those. Anyway, so Congress expressly given to Congress, but only 2 years into George Washington's presidency, the second Congress temporarily delegated its authority under the first militia clause by passing a statute, quote, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. That is subsection 15 of Article 1, Section 8. That's where that comes from. And so when we come back, we'll continue going through this and its association to the Whiskey Rebellion so that we can start understanding what, you know, what we really need to understand about Republic Review and why we absolutely have to canonize the Constitution. We'll be right back. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so now we've kind of laid out the clause in question that was violated by Congress, that subsection 15 of Article 1, Section 8. And so this moves on and says that the Militia Act of 1792 was meant to be a three-year-long experiment, but gave the president broad powers to call out the militia. Now, had the Supreme Court actually looked at this, and at that point in time, because John Marshall wasn't involved, I believe that the Supreme Court should have rightfully stated, and I believe that person, who was that person? Because we talked about that up above, and we kind of know, it was Wilson from Pennsylvania. I'm just trying to figure out. Yeah, it was James Wilson. He was the Supreme Court Justice at the time, and he basically told Washington that the use of the militia was absolutely in order with the Constitution. But this concept of the Militia Act, Wilson should have stepped up at that point in time when they were going down this path in, 1794, you know, in a response to this mob and everything else. This is where, as far as I am concerned, you know, he also should have said that you have to make Congress do this because that was not in tone and in a line with the Constitution and the letter of the law as it was described to the states. Anyway, Section 1 of the Act covered foreign invasions and imminent dangers from a foreign nation and met little resistance in Congress. On the other hand, Section 2, which dealt with suppressing insurrection, met with much resistance on the floor of Congress. After much debate, now you got to understand one thing about these debates, like the ratification debates, debates in Congress and so forth. There is more than ample time for all the negativity to come out. And nine times out of ten, the negativity isn't coming out from a voluminous amount of people. It's the same person coming up and coming up with a different argument, coming up with a different argument. And so Professor Lash, in one of his articles regarding the Second Amendment and the 14th Amendment and so forth, and the ratification process of the 14th Amendment, he points to there was a lot of arguments in Congress regarding the 14th Amendment. But all of the negative comments that were made have to be wiped away because Congress didn't accept those arguments. They accepted the language and the argument that promoted the 14th Amendment. That becomes the legally binding terms and definitions of that as Congress basically created this new amendment. So that information should have been, you know, sent out to the states as the supporting information of this amendment. And then they can go through the debates and let other people come up with their own negativity and go through that process. And if the state so ratifies, then those negative arguments get thrown out as well, because what that is stating is that in the process of ratification, the delegates or those representatives in that meeting discussing that particular amendment to the Constitution or law was rejected, and that the argument for the law or amendment was accepted. So you don't put in, it has no place in inserting fallacies and or arguments that were rejected. It's antithetical to our legal and common law system. And so anyway, after much debate, additional amendments were added requiring judicial intervention and that the president must first order the insurgents to disperse. 2 years after this act passed, President Washington called forth the militia to suppress the Whiskey Rebellion. In Washington's sixth State of the Union address, he recounted the actions that he took. First, Washington followed the Constitution and the Militia Act by seeking and receiving confirmation from the Supreme Court. Now, I think that, you know, the hindsight being 2020, that as we understand, because they actually amended the Constitution for the 12th Amendment, they recognized that you just can't, you know, arbitrarily change something in that compact. Because who's the parties to that compact? You need the state's authority. You didn't need Congress's authority. It's like being the judge of your own trial. Well, I find myself innocent. Surprisingly. Isn't that interesting? I'm innocent of all crime or all asserted crimes or all allegations. Anyway, quote, upon testimony of these facts, an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States notified me that, quote, in the counties of Washington and Allegheny in Pennsylvania, laws of the United States were opposed and the execution thereof obstructed by combinations too powerful to be suppressed by the ordinary course of judicial proceedings or by the powers vested in the marshal of that district. Now, so, see, this was a federal issue, and the federal marshals were the ones that basically should have gone to the sheriff and said, look, this is the Constitution. You swore to take an oath to support the Constitution. You need to give me a posse so that we can go and enforce this. But that's not what they did. And, you know, as we see, they kind of went down this path of trying to create their own little, if you want to call them, mercenary network with marshals and so forth. Because clearly in the Constitution, the Congress shall have the power to call for the militia to execute the laws of the Union, not a marshal or a federal marshal, you know, network. Now, there is merit in having a federal network at the state level to basically say, okay, you know, if you want to dispute this, we'll drag you into court and look at this in the constitutional, you know, jurisdictions and so forth. And if we're proven right, then you have to do this. And if not, and especially today with Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, anybody that does not support the Constitution and laws in pursuant to the Constitution are violating their oath of office and must be removed. So now we have the ability to start removing judges and all of these other people to start enforcing the Constitution the way it should be enforced. And this kind of stuff would never have happened, but actually because there are people and because they never canonized the Constitution. This goes back to how do we get into this mess? First off, they never canonized the Constitution. They didn't do what needs to be done, and which is what I'm calling for the Constitution Party to do. The Constitution Party clearly needs to step up. They need to be the host of canonizing the Constitution by going through the ratification debates and pulling out every single term and definition as the Federalists laid out. This is what this means in the Constitution. It is organized and tied to those parts of the Constitution. So if you have a question of what that line means, you go to this stack of all these definitions and how they harmonize. And, you know, it's kind of like me when I provide you with different views of the woodshed. You know, I'm not taking you around the woodshed to beat you. I'm just trying to give you the full view so that you can see it from every angle and understand the intent and purpose of the woodshed. Does that make sense? I think it does. Anyway, second, Washington issued a proclamation commanding the insurgents to disperse. So he kind of followed the order of the act. Quote, I postpone, therefore, the summoning of the militia immediately into the field, but I required them to be held in readiness that if my anxious endeavors to reclaim the deluded and convince the malignant of their danger should be fruitless, military force might be prepared to act before the season should be too far advanced, in other words, the wintertime. My proclamation of the 7th of August last, in 1794, was accordingly issued and accompanied with the appointment of commissioners who were charged to repair to the scene of the insurrection. Finally, the president assembles the militia to quell the rebellion. Quote, thus, these are all the quotes that are coming out of his inauguration. Quote, thus, the painful alternative could not be discarded. I ordered the militia to march after once more admonishing the insurgents in my proclamation on the 25th of September last. Washington was distraught that the military force had to be used against his own countrymen. But he was very happy to report that the rebellion was over. This event was disgraceful and required a significant portion of the country's resources, but it proved that our prosperity rested on a solid foundation of citizens who understood the true principles of liberty. Quote, while there is cause to lament that occurrences of this nature should have disgraced the name of the interrupted the tranquility of any part of our community, or should have diverted to a new application any portion of the public resources, there are not wanting real and substantial consolidations for the misfortune. It has demonstrated that our prosperity rests on solid foundations by furnishing an additional that my fellow citizens understand the true principles of government and liberty, that they feel their inseparable union, that notwithstanding all the devices which have been used to sway them from the interests and duty, they are not as ready to maintain the authority of the laws against licentiousness, invasions, as they were to defend the rights against usurpation. Commander-in-Chief George Washington could not have been prouder of the militiamen that he called forth and marched 300 miles to Pennsylvania. That was not a one-day thing. Quote, it has been a spectacle displaying to the highest advantages of a Republican government. We're just going to restart this over again to this part. I hope you're starting to see, you know, how Washington kind of, you know, took this and how he viewed this and provides his, you know, his eye and his mind to this process, but I am here to tell you that understanding the ratification debates as well as I do, there is a different angle. We'll be right back. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's get back to the content, because this is all about the content, as you know. Anywho, as I was just saying going into break, quote, it has been a spectacle displaying to the highest advantage of Republican government to behold the most and the least wealthy of our citizens standing in the same ranks as private soldiers, preeminently distinguished by being the army of the Constitution. Now, you've heard me tell you that the paradigm in the framers' days was the militia, was the army. Those two terms were synonymous, that the army really didn't exist without the militia. There may have been a war department. There may have been some people to have strategic plans and what have you. But the army itself, the ranks of the army, does not exist until they federalize the militia for a very specific purpose. This is how it's supposed to be. The Constitution has never been amended to actually allow and establish a permanent army for what they're doing. They've justified, but the only way that that army can actually operate is by pulling up the militia. They have to change the Constitution to say, we're no longer going to utilize the militia for the army. And they haven't done that. And this is why the states have to step in and say, you know what, we're going to actually hold you to that, because, you know, we don't think it's a good thing to become a nation that its profession or its greatest profession is fighting and winning wars. We believe our greatest profession is, you know, fighting and supporting liberty and allowing liberty to thrive in every vestige of this world, in every corner of the world. That's why I'm telling you that Trump needs to actually start the dominoes in going after these communist states. And I've said this I say this all the time. So anyway, it's not about me right now. It's about what we're talking about. So Washington was so proud that he preeminently distinguished by being the army of the Constitution. undeterred by a march of 300 miles over rugged mountains, by approach of an inclement season, or by any other discouragement. Now, these men had crops in the field. These men had things going on that were they were called up to do their duty, and they did. Washington was also proud and wanted to thank the patriotic support he received from the governors. Quote, "Nor ought I admit to acknowledge the efficacy and patriotic cooperation which I have experienced from the chief magistrates of the states to which my requisitions have been addressed. Above all, he wanted to give a praise to every citizen of America for their affection and vigilant support of the Constitution." See, you hear me say these things, that the, you know, our oath of a citizen in supporting the Constitution, how it is implied upon us at birth. I mean, when you read these things, you understand that this is how these people felt. They didn't think they had to write it down because they couldn't understand a nation becoming so debased and so lost of reason that they would actually bite the hand that actually created their liberty and actually turn their back on it. It was unfathomable for them. Above all, he wanted to praise Americans for divinity. I just said that. So, quote, and this is how he said it. "To every description of citizens, let praise be given, but let them preserve in their affectionate vigilance over that precious depository of American happiness, the Constitution of the United States. Let me cherish it, too, for the sake of those who, from every clime, are daily seeking a dwelling in our land." He's talking about the immigrants that want to come to America to live the life of liberty. Well, I think that we're at that point now where we have the ability. We have the ability now to start assimilating nations as the Constitution allows for states to apply to the United States to become a state in the Union. There's no reason why Estonia shouldn't be applying. Any state that really wants to embrace limited government and actually the people of those states, like Estonia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, they should want to understand and go through the necessary changes to become a state in the United States. And we need to get back to that. We need to get rid of all of this unconstitutional ideologies by the Democrats and the communists. We need to get rid of those people. As we bring in Hong Kong and those who want to embrace liberty, we start exporting, you know, all of these people who are here to try to destroy our Constitution and liberty. Let them go to China. They'll go to the mainland, and Hong Kong will become a territory on its way to state status. It's the same thing with Taiwan. It's the same thing with Crimea. It's the same thing. Any nation that has the deepest desire to possess and guaranteed possession of liberty by partaking in this Constitution that the Lord gave us, I think that we, you know, it is morally wrong, and we are a corrupt nation for withholding it from them. I believe that they can come in, you know, over time. As I said, the culture has to change. And that is Congress's job, is to ensure that that culture is changed enough to where all those citizens of that nation become absolute citizens of the United States, that they understand that they're obligated by this oath. If, for any reason, they are not willing to support the Constitution and defend it against enemies both foreign and domestic, then they need to get out of Hong Kong and get over the mainland China and stay over there. Because if it comes out through their service, through their actions or deeds, we need to reinstate the Tory Acts, and we need to start ripping people out of America that do not support the Constitution. See, we somehow think that they're a patriot because they support this deep state government and this unconstitutional government. I'm sorry. That's wrong. We're to support the Constitution, not the government. The government must be aligned fully with the Constitution. We should not allow it to start serving us with entitlements and so forth. Anyway, as this goes on, and when all was said and done, he hoped that he would realize that this insurrection was based upon ignorance and false accusations of the government. And what he said was, quote, "And when in the calm moments of reflection, they shall have retraced the origin and progress of the insurrection, let them determine whether it has been fomented by combinations of men who, careless of consequence and disregard the unerring truth that those who rouse cannot always appease a civil convulsion, have disseminated from an ignorance or perversions of facts, suspicions, jealousies, and accusations of the whole government." Now it was time for Congress to amend the laws and make the Militia Act of 1792 permanent. What better and more honorable way was there for Congress to thank the citizens of America than to give the president full and lasting power to call forth the militia to suppress insurrections, to repel invasions? I mean, come on, how repugnant is this? But this is what he said, quote, "Having thus fulfilled the engagement which I took when I entered into office, quote, to best of my ability to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, close quote, on you, gentlemen, and the people by whom you are deputied, I rely for support. In the arrangement to which the possibility of a similar contingency will naturally draw your attention, it ought not to be forgotten that the militia laws have exhibited such striking defects as could not have been supplied by the zeal of our citizens. Besides the ordinary expense and waste, which are not the least of the defects, every appeal to those laws is attended with a doubt on its success. The devising and establishing of a well-regulated militia would be a genuine source of legislative honor and a perfect title to public gratitude. I therefore entertain a hope that the present session will not pass without carrying to its full energy the power of organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and thus providing, in the language of the Constitution, for calling them forth to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions." So what he's saying here, whoever did this, made the presumption that he was actually calling for a permanency of making these changes. Well, he's calling for a permanency to fix the deficiencies of the calling forth of the militia, but not necessarily to change the separations of power. There is a reason why our legislators are our sovereigns. You have to understand this. The president is not the sovereign. He should never be vested that sole authority and power. This was very clear in the ratification debates. You know who didn't attend the ratification debates? George Washington. And so he didn't understand how it was discussed and described and defined. But he was at the Constitutional Convention. And so with that, as you can tell with the leading in music, this kind of wraps up this amount of content. We still have more to kind of finish up this concept of the Whiskey Rebellion. My friends, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process.
This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.